back. This is Mark Steiner. That's Honey by Moby from his album Play. Hit number one on this day in 2000. I am Mark Steiner here on The Mark Steiner Show on WEAA, your source for cool jazz and more, the voice of the community. And we are going to tackle a subject here today that has hit the news in a big way and hit this community in a large way, which is the announcement that over 23,000 notices were sent to citizens of Baltimore City, 2,000 more, if I'm right, to Baltimore County.
Right.
To cut off people's water for non-payment of bills. Well, there's $40 million owed the city of Baltimore. But of that $40 million, $15 million in unpaid bills comes from the residential accounts. But we'll talk about what that means and who the people are that may have received these notices. And another $15 million is owned by businesses. Nonprofits and government agencies, nonprofits and different government agencies owe another $10 million. And plants, like the old steel plant here, owe the city $5.4 million, which was never paid for their water. And on top of that, the city pays them $1.4 million to clean up the mess they left us on the land that they built the steel on. So, to say all that, not to kind of play my hand too much here, but to be clear about what we're looking at, and we've talked in this program a lot with a statistic that we have from that we've been using a lot on this program, that there are 86,000 families in Baltimore City that are home insecure. So many of those people who are not paying those bills are part of those home insecure people. And the question is, like Delegate Mary Washington raised, let me just say, of all the elected officials in the state legislature and Baltimore City Council, unless I've missed something and my guests can correct me about what I may have missed, is that she's the only person I've heard so far to say that we have to do something. And she wrote a letter to the mayor, to Rudy Chow, who's the director of Public Works. And by the way, we called the Department of Public Works. They have not called us back about coming on the program to join in this conversation. We did reach out to them about that. But she has called for certain things, which we will be reading to you from her letter to the mayor and what she's asking for. So having said all that, let me introduce our guests. Jessica Lewis is in the house, housing organizer for the Right to Housing Alliance. Stephen Janis is with us. In studio, investigative journalist for the Real News Network and co-author of You Can't Stop Murder, Truths About Policing in Baltimore and Beyond, and Why Do We Kill? The Pathology of Policing in Baltimore, he wrote with a former homicide detective, Kelvin Sewell. Christopher Summers joins us by phone, who's president of the Maryland Public Policy Institute. And Kim Chuhart joins us by phone, a community activist in this city, and misses nothing that goes on at City Hall at all. So well, good to have the four of you with us.
That's true.
Mark.
It's true, Kim. You can join us here, 410-319-8888. Write to us here, talk at steinershow.org. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, log on to our Facebook pages, but call. I want to hear your thoughts. Maybe you are one of the ones who are receiving a notice. We want to hear your thoughts on what's going on, your ideas about maybe you support the idea that people don't pay their bills, just need to lose their water. Whatever you think, I want you to call us with your ideas and thoughts at 410-319-8888. But as our resident journalist in the house, Dr. Janis.
Hey, how are you?
talk about a bit of background here for
us. Yeah, well, you know, I was at the Zeta Center 2 days ago when they made a presentation to the residents about some of the things they can do. But certainly this whole issue started in about 2012 when the comptroller, Joan Pratt, got a water bill for about $700 and subsequently did an audit. And the audit found that the city had overbilled customers about $7.8 million. But it even goes back further than that because in 2008, I was covering people getting evicted in public housing over water bills that were like $2,000 or $3,000. So there's been an ongoing problem with the city's water billing system. And so we fast forward to now where you have an amalgam of people who owe money. And interestingly, you were talking about political resistance to this or some Jack Young, who was the person who actually called for the moratorium on putting people in tax lien sale for not paying their water bills, actually, you know, supported the city's efforts. So there seems to be, at least from my perspective, the people I've talked to, a little appetite in City Hall for going, you know, coming to the defense of people. But obviously it's an extremely complex issue. It's not simple. It's just someone not paying their water bill.
I have been surprised, Jessica Lewis, at the kind of lack of response, either saying, yes, this is right, or no, there's something wrong here by most of our elected officials.
Yeah, and I think what Stephen's mentioning is this, a comment that Jack Young made, I believe, in the Baltimore Sun last week, saying that, you know, this water shutoff is better. It's better than people getting foreclosed on or losing their homes. Like,
yes,
it's an either-or situation.
Right.
But I think, you know, something to consider is that half of households in Baltimore are renters' households. Mm-hmm. Often water bills can be collected as rent. So when people fail to pay their water bills because of inability to pay, which, you know, as Mark pointed out earlier, a lot of people are housing what's called shelter poor, housing poor, unable to pay for housing. When water bills are added to that, they can actually become evicted for not paying their water bills. So this is an issue where people can lose their homes for not paying
evicted
a water bill.
In privately owned places?
Yeah. They can become evicted because water can be collected as rent if it's written such on your lease. So they can be dragged through Baltimore City's eviction court, through rent court, for not paying a water bill.
But I thought that most time when you rent a place, a house or an apartment, that the water bills are paid by the person who rents the house or the apartment.
The water accounts can only be held by the person who owns the account, but often more and more renters are becoming required to shoulder that burden.
In their lease. It's written in the lease.
In their lease. Oftentimes it's, you know, sometimes it's not written in the lease that water's collected, but the landlords do collect the water bill independently of the rent.
I mean, in 2008, I saw several eviction notices or watched people evicted over water bills we wrote about. So just saying I've actually seen that occur for it was part of a public housing project, but they were evicted, if I recall. So it's not unprecedented.
Yes. As a former landlord, yes.
Kim Trueheart, go ahead.
You can include that in the lease and collect it at the time you collect the rent because you have defined it as rent.
Huh. So let me get both your thoughts, our two guests on here by phone, and let me go to Chris Summers for his analysis and take on what this means and what the city is and should be doing, and then go to Kim Trueheart, who you just heard. Chris?
Hey, thanks, Mark, for having me on the show. And not to add on, but obviously, I'm sure everyone knows this isn't, you know, a recent problem. Obviously, this is, you know, several years, particularly in the billing. But I think what's sort of missing, and it's seeing what now is becoming sort of the narrative that this is becoming a right, when in fact it's not. You know, it's a service provided by municipal government, and so there is a cost associated with that. And there are programs in place to help those, particularly those below the poverty level or senior citizens that, you know, the city does provide. And so it's not really sure of how many are actually taking advantage or even know that exists. But there, you know, as I said, there is a cost associated with providing this. And so the city is, I think, now making a better attempt, obviously, with the correct billing and accurate readings than what it was in the past and during the investigation where you had these, you know, several thousand dollar water bills. But, you know, if you have people that are in arrears for years, you know, that's a problem, and it has to be taken care of.
So I want to come back to the question of water being a right or not, and what Mary Washington has written about the UN Declaration of Human Rights and how that feeds into this, if it does or does not. But Kim, go ahead. Let me get your thoughts on this in a broad sense, and then we'll come to the phones and back to this discussion.
Mark, the first thing I want is all your listeners to know that April the 14th, next week, mm-hmm. from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. is Taxpayer Night at the War Memorial. Baltimore City residents, ratepayers of these water bills, need to show up en masse. 6 to 8 p.m., April the 14th. Okay. I just got off, and really I've got them holding, the One Baltimore Coalition is holding a conference call right now about how to organize around this. And this whole system is just so perverse. Right now we have Rudy Chow, the director of DPW. He establishes the requirements for fixing our aging infrastructure. Then he also determines how much revenue he needs to pay for those projects that he puts in place. There is no public input at all in that process. And so I say it's a little askew because he's piling on new projects every day. Right? He needs more money to pay for them. They raised the rates by double digits. They promised 4 years ago to never raise them by double digits. And then all of a sudden, now we're up to 15% water rate increase annually. The system is just not set up to engage with the people, to understand the people's needs. Baltimore City is a poor city. We have poor residents here. And most of the programs that we think should be aiding the citizens are only touching a very small number of people in the city who have very low incomes or are on fixed incomes. Right now, the system just doesn't know how to help the residents, and we've got to help them understand that. And so until we get people who are receptive to listening to the problems of residents who are in power positions, like the council president and the mayor, we're going to have these onerous kinds of initiatives that just roll out one after another.
Let me go to the phone.
If city government does reach out via mail or whatever, isn't that, I mean, that's an effort to reach out to citizens. I wouldn't blame someone's economic status for not having the ability.
Let me
just jump into this real fast here. Ken, let's come right back in. But I think what Chris said is something we need to jump into right now before we go to Leo or Bruce and the other callers who are calling in. The idea that what you just said, Chris, was people's economic circumstance. What'd you say?
That shouldn't be used as an excuse for them not being able. There are to be able to pay the service that they can't. You know, city government is providing a service for helping those that are below poverty level or senior citizens. I think there's what 39% discount rate if you're a senior citizen.
65 years and old, right? Older.
Correct. And then there's also a credit for low income credit of $161. And I think the average, month. So I think that's a great effort.
And the average quarterly bill is $300. So what is $160 going to do?
Well, that's better than zero, ma'am.
You get cut off after two quarters.
There again, it's not free.
Let's jump into this question of not being free. Kim and you are debating here at the moment, and Jessica Lewis. I mean, part of the question is, I think is the kind of average income or non-income of close to half of the city of Baltimore is what we're talking about here.
Yeah, and I think first I want to say that there are programs that help on a very, very limited basis for a very small portion of people. None of these services are available to people who are renting and the water bill is not in their name. This is half the population, again, of half of the households in Baltimore are renting households. If their landlord is not paying their water bill, they have no access to these kinds of services to help them. They have absolutely no access to these services. Second, I want to say that, yes, having a low income does affect your ability to pay a water bill. Mark talks about this statistic all the time that people are shelter poor. They're paying, half of Baltimore households are paying more than 30% of their income to rent when water's included in that. It puts basic necessities out of reach for a lot of residents. Isn't it the responsibility of a city government that's collecting our taxes to pay for these kinds of services, to provide these services for households? We think water is a right. It is a right. It's something that falls out of the sky. We heard one of our members say at a meeting Tuesday. This is something that we should all have access to. We need it to survive. There's absolutely no excuse that water bills should be $300 on a quarterly basis for residents who are not making enough money to meet their basic needs.
Well, I would have to disagree that it's not a human right. And sure, it does fall naturally out of the sky, but I don't think we want people taking buckets down to the Inner Harbor and filling them up and then drinking it as their daily water source. And that's why, we have purification systems, massive systems that provide our water that goes through purification and a delivery source, which is capital intensive, which is labor intensive, which, requires fuel. And that's why you have this monthly bill or quarterly bill that provides, thank goodness we live in a country where we really don't have to worry about when we turn on the tap that, hey, the water's, is it safe to drink? And it's going to be, reliable every time I do turn on the shower or turn on the kitchen sink. And maybe a bigger question, another show for you is, Mark, it's constantly here, and, we have all these people in Baltimore City in the poverty level. Well, you do have to question, why does that continue? Why is that a constant problem? Maybe it goes back to City Hall and its misaligned policy priorities for the city.
Or maybe it goes back to the fact that there are low wages and no jobs.
Well, it goes back to policy decisions by elected leadership for decades.
Or that Walmart only pays so much money, sometimes they can't survive, or people don't pay the kind of money that people need to survive on a living wage in this town. That's part of the problem, too, isn't it?
Well, no, the living wage hasn't worked in Baltimore City, Mark. I think it was one of the first cities to actually enact the living wage in the city, and we see how well that's worked out over the years.
Well, I think that it hasn't worked out because we haven't really insisted on it in a very serious way. It's a piece of paper with nothing under it, but, I mean...
The living wage legislation only applies to government people who are working on government contracts. So it has not permeated through the commerce of the city.
Well, but back to the water source market, the city does not take care of these tens of thousands of bills that are in the arrears. Eventually, what you'll have is much higher rates for everyone.
Well, Stephen,
I think the city continues to lose money.
Mr. Stewart made a really very important point that there's been three consecutive double-digit increases, and part of the reason is because of political vision. I mean, the water system has been allowed to deteriorate, and it wasn't addressed for years and years, and now suddenly, in the past five or six years, the city has made these efforts to do it, but it's all falling on people at the same time. And I think also, from a political perception down at City Hall, there is a sense when a corporate scofflaw gets away with a $5 million bill that really, this isn't being fairly applied to people, residential or renter, once again, is sort of left out of the equation of saying, well, I just can't pay my bill. Well, neither can the steel company pay their bill. So why, I think there's definitely a sense that this is not being applied fairly.
I want to get to the phones here. And as we get to the phones here, I want people to think about this to come back to. This is some of the things that Mary Washington wrote. She called me this morning saying she could not be on the program because she was on the floor in the House of Delegates debating bills. But she did write this lengthy letter to Rudy Chow and to Mayor Stephen Williams Blake, and she said both Rudy Chow and the mayor did get back to her to say they would talk with her about what she's saying. And part of what she's saying is that, and we can talk about whether we agree or disagree with this, she thinks Baltimore City needs to demonstrate that all households receiving shutoff notices can afford to pay, otherwise it's a violation of human rights. And then she, in her letter, she looks to saying we could do it, if we keep saying we don't be the next Detroit, where the United Nations says, quote, disconnections of water due to non-payment are permissible if it can be shown that the resident is able to pay but is not paying. When people are generally unable to pay, it's the state's obligation to provide urgent measures, including financial assistance, and going on to all of it. And so that's what she points out. She also says it appears that the currently available low-income water assistance program and the low-income senior water discount program, which we talked about earlier, are failing to reach all the households who qualify. And she writes, I'm concerned that shutoff notices are being sent to non-owner-occupied housing who can't fairly remedy the situation as landlords are the only entity allowed to open water accounts. And disconnecting service to thousands of homes also poses a very real public health threat. And the lack of sanitation would particularly affect elderly, pregnant women, children, and people with diabetes and other critical illnesses, which was part of her letter to the officials of the city. I mean, there are serious...
Bravo to her.
So let me open the phones here and come back to our guests at 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Mark Steiner.
Good morning, Leo. How are you?
Good morning, everyone. I regret to say I can't attend Taxpayers Night on the 14th because I have a conflict in my own schedule, but I will encourage others to come out. It's been my experience that at Taxpayers Night, the mayor, the president, the city council, and the rest of them, they don't dialogue with you. They hear you, but they don't respond to those entreaties and those statements that others make people bring to them. So we'll see how that goes, but I do encourage the support what was said about attendance therein. The Sparrows Point Bethlehem Steel owes the city, I'm told, $7 million, and I don't understand why the city hasn't taken the legal action that one would expect the city solicitor, who's the mayor's lawyer, to take. That makes no sense to me. They've had an outstanding water bill, the big business people, in that case for 6 years or more, no action is taken, but yet you're going to shut off people, homeowners, you're going to put poor people out of business. This is a ruse, Mark, for gentrification. This is a gentrification strategy where you can get rid of poor folk and black folk and other folk you don't want in the city to attract others. They're not fair. They're not even-handed. in terms of how they go about enforcing the provisions which they speak about with regard to the infrastructure and the water. And they don't bill people in a timely fashion. I understand in some cases, for as much as 2 years or more, people were not billed. Whose fault is that? The mayor has been in the city council 20 years.
So let me pick up on some of this. So when you look at the fact that $15 million in the unpaid bills are from residential accounts, but we have to break that down to see how many are individuals and how many are landlords who haven't paid their bill. I haven't seen those numbers. And the $15 million is owed by businesses and what that means and who those businesses are. And that another $10 million is owned by nonprofits and government agencies. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if the four of you, before we go to the phones and Bruce is our next caller up, if there is a way that any of the four of you have of starting to think about what would be an alternative policy to addressing the problem that we have, given that reality and what we have to do before we start shutting off people's water. And I guess that shows my majority of what my sense is. But before you start shutting off people's water, who are poor in the poorest neighborhoods in the city, what is the way that we should approach this? Ideas. Jessica, go ahead, then we'll go around the room.
Yeah, sure.
I think a good start first is knowing who the commercial users are and how much they owe.
Releasing that information. Yes.
Yeah, and I believe there are several Maryland Public Information Act requests regarding that out right now. But shutting off the largest violators and violators of you know, with delinquent water bills who are not relying on it for their basic sanitation and hydration, you know, targeting them first, shutting them off first. We're actually calling for a moratorium on shutoffs. We'll have a petition launched this afternoon calling for exactly that analysis. We don't want water shutoffs to residential customers until there's an analysis of who the largest delinquent accounts are, without a commitment to target them first and without an analysis of who the residential customers are and why they're not able to pay these water bills.
You know, building on that, the political recognition that, you know, there was a tremendous amount of confusion and burden on people. We had people who were getting $15,000 water bills, having their water shut off, but it wasn't their fault. That, you know, when we went to the city, they finally admitted that there's been a lot of chaos in the system and these double-digit increases over 3 years, that some political recognition that this could be a more complex problem than simply a few people refusing to pay.
Chris?
Let me hear
Chris and go right to Kim. And we're looking at solutions beyond what we're seeing the city do. Chris and then Kim. And then
if I can, real, I'll try quickly to address the caller's comment, and I couldn't disagree more. This is not a strategy of gentrification at all. Let's be clear about that. And true, you know, if it's the former Bastille, if they owe, you know, millions in unpaid, then, you know, that is a significant problem. And sure, if a corporation or even nonprofit, and it's, you know, you have to wonder, is it there's sort of free rider problem taking place if they realize, well, hey, you know, the city's not going to, you know, come after me because I'm not paying the bill. I mean, they're not turning the water service off. Well, then, hey, why should I send a check in to city government for the service? And I'm sure there's a lot of that going on. But, and sure, that's, you know, part of the city's problem. But also, you know, I don't think, sure, if it's a landlord in a multi-unit building, you know, and the renter is not the sole responsible person for sending it, and it's the landlord, then sure, the city has every right to aggressively go after that individual and through legal means or whatever to make sure that they pay that. You know, it's not fair to the renter that they now are cut off from having water service because the person they're sending the rent check to is delinquent in their responsibility to the city. But also, this really goes to a bigger problem within city government. And the other agency is ESTAT in the state of Maryland, is another one that has this enormous problem. There's a huge IT infrastructure problem in terms of outdated systems, inefficient systems, that probably you wouldn't have a lot of these problems if city government did have the latest and greatest in terms of databases and technology available, because they're using antiquated computer systems. And so I think that would solve a lot of these problems if we would sort of bring city government's IT infrastructure, you know, at least into the 21st century.
I wouldn't disagree with that, though I might challenge the first part of your statement, having spent most of my life working and living in the poorest communities, and why people don't pay the bills, not because they don't want to usually, it's because they don't have the money to. They got to juggle. Can I pay the bus fare for my kid to get to school? Do I pay my rent? Do I go buy this food? Do I pay my water bill? Do I pay my electric bill? Which one do I pay? What I don't pay? And that is what people wrestle with every day of the week. Over half the city of Baltimore lives like that, and we never seem to think about those other half. But let me get to Kim,
and then
come on. Kim?
No, that's fine.
Your thoughts on what should be done?
Mark, I think that right now, in the immediate term, we need to look at a sliding scale on an affordability basis. This is a human rights issue, and we can't treat this as though this is a, you know, pay-go kind of situation. People can't afford to pay. And so it would be, you know, we raised this issue with the BG&E rate increase. Mm-hmm. Why not establish a scale based on income? That if folks across the nation realize that housing should not cost any more than 30% of your monthly income, why can't we do something similar with water? I think the city has a responsibility, as Delegate Mary Washington put out in her letter, that if people can't afford to pay, then the government has a responsibility to address that affordability aspect. So, and nobody is looking at that. The programs that they have in place only reach a very, very small minority of people. And they are the masses. 25% of the people in Baltimore City live below the poverty line.
And
that's a huge number.
And that's the old poverty line.
You know, and I was just thinking, if you look at the increases, they're compounded. So you're talking about wages haven't risen more than 2%, but the water bill has risen 11%, then 12%, now 15%. And that's all compounded, you know, because the last increase is compounded on top of the first. So really, there needs to be some sort of recognition, like a homestead property tax cap, maybe to a certain extent, that people get to cap their water bills for a while or something. Because there's really no commensurate increase in wages.
So we have to take a very quick break here. Time for legal IDs and more at the station. We'll come right back. And Donna and Bruce, the next caller's up, we'll come back to what Kim was trying to say before we went to break. Then we'll get to our callers, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on the water shutoff crisis facing Baltimore. Are we the next Detroit? Stay with us. I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. And that's Love Will Tear Us Apart by Joy Division, which was produced by Martin Hannett, who passed away on this day in 1991. And we went to break a few minutes ago. What you heard was Marian Anderson singing in 1939 at the Lincoln Memorial, one of America's great singers. She was denied the right to sing by the Daughters of the American Revolution. They would not let her sing in Constitution Hall. So the then First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt said she wouldn't have that and invited her to sing at the Lincoln Memorial to the concert she wasn't allowed to do. 75,000 people attended that concert in 1939 on this day. So here we are with Jessica Lewis, who is housing organizer for the Right to Housing Alliance, Stephen Janis, investigative journalist for the Real News Network, Christopher Summers, president of the Maryland Public Policy Institute, Kim Trueheart, noted community activist, as we talk about the problems of water shutoffs and water bills in Baltimore City, 410-319-8888. I said, Kim, you can finish the thought you tried to start. It was going to break. Then we're going to go right to the phones.
Thanks, Mark. This is a matter of equity. What we do know is that certain jurisdictions outside of Baltimore City have negotiated cheaper water rates than those residents living in Baltimore City. I believe Howard County has a rate that's about half of what we pay in Baltimore City. We need to really look at this situation in terms of equity. I strongly believe that we need to establish rates based on a sliding scale based on what your income is. Our government has a responsibility. This is a human rights issue, and we need to make water accessible, but you can't do it on the backs of the poor, and that's what's happening right now. And unfortunately, we don't have sympathetic ears at City Hall. Council President Young, I'm going to forgive him for what he said, because he is obviously misguided in his thinking. He needs to be the strongest advocate on behalf of the people, standing up for sliding scale and rates that are based on what people can afford.
I'm going to get to the phones here. When we come back, though, from the phones, I do want to ask the four of you just that particular question as the city tries to wrestle with how to handle what is a real problem when you have $40 million of unpaid bills and you have a budget deficit in the city. That's it. That's not a minor issue that any city would face. But
we have a surplus this year, Mark, $12 million surplus
right.
this year.
But still $40 million is still a lot of money for a city to have outstanding. So the question is what to do. And whether Kim Trueheart's idea of sliding scales or asking government agencies and private businesses and large nonprofits to pay their bills first and then investigate why the other bills are not being paid, is that the way the city should go? What would that entail? I want to ask the four of you that, but let's go to the phones first. At 410-319-8888, Bruce, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning, Bruce.
So, first off, but I don't want to go into the weeds on that. I worked for Bethlehem State for 29 years. Good luck getting any money from Bethlehem Steel. They've been a non-entity since, I believe, it was August of 03.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe the last people that owned it, there were four other people that owned it, owes money on that. But I don't want to get into it. A lot of angry steel workers about that, too. But that's another issue. So here's one of the other issues that goes on. My neighbor, for privacy, I can't mention it, but my neighbor has had a problem with a water bill. They rent it. And this is one of the problems, too, that exists. There are a lot of landlords, people that own rental properties that aren't registered as rental properties or don't have leases. So when they're having problems with the water bill, there's even where the meter is. There's one meter for two residences, and she's had problems for years with them, and the meters haven't been read correctly. But then here's the problem. This landlord should be taking responsibility. I tell her, well, your landlord should be going to the water department or be going to the mayor or the council member to try to straighten this out. But because she doesn't have a lease, and like a lot of rental properties in my neighborhood, there are a lot of unregistered rental properties, and a lot of the landlords, they exploit the renters by not having leases so they can exploit them. They can throw them out or evict them or manipulate them. So that's another issue to do with, too. And, you know, when Joan Pratt kept pushing for different types of audits in different bureaucracies, the mayor fought it. She fought it 100%. So have a good day.
You too, Bruce. Thanks so much for your contribution. 410-319-8888, and that's coming from his neighborhood of O'Donnell Heights, what he sees around him, at 410-319-8888. Donna, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Good morning, Donna.
I'm enjoying your show. Excellent topic.
Thank you.
My background is biology, and I'm a biologist and an environmental health specialist. And one thing is I do not agree with the sliding scale. And, you know, because every time I turn around, I always hear everybody talk about, well, the poor people. Working class people are paying high bills, too. So if you're going to talk about, if we're going to talk about equity, we got to talk about equity across the board. There's something wrong with the way the city rates its water. For example, because I'm in the science field, I know how to conserve water. My rate, my unit, because they go by units, is less than 3 units. And I'm still paying $200, which means I don't use a lot of water in my house. Why am I paying $200? And they try and explain it. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. So there's something wrong with how they calculate it. Their whole system needs to be revamped because you go by units. You should go by usage. If you go by usage and then you put other mechanisms in the house to reduce the amount of water, reduction green type systems, you could probably reduce, you know, the amount of water that comes out. My second question is, there is a way to get the corporations and the companies and the nonprofits to pay. When I worked for government, I'm retired, a lot of the state agencies had problems getting private companies to comply with state regulations. So what these are local governments. They could not get state government, private
right,
entities
right.
to comply. So what they did was they went, one state agency went back to the General Assembly and got a bill to let the Attorney General take those private entities to court because the local governments don't have the money to fight the bigger corporations, the nonprofits, and whatever. So there may have to be legislation to go that has to be written up to let the Attorney General handle those, like Bethlehem Farrell's point, because they have our taxpayer money will be should be allowed to use to fight them. So because Baltimore City doesn't have the money. My third question is real quick. We need to look at how WSSC rate and regulate their water in other counties that are on sewer water systems, so that we can come up with some newer ways and new technologies to make it easier for and equitable for everybody, not just the poor, but the working class, the middle class, and anybody else. And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you, Donna. You were going to say,
well, I was just going to say just quickly, the city is supposed to be installing these smart meters, which will mean if you don't use any water, you don't get billed. Because right now, if you don't use any water, you still get a minimum billing. And so that might address that issue. But that is true that you still have to pay something even if you don't use any water. And certainly the city has resources to go after people. I mean, they spend millions of dollars defending lawsuits against the police department. Millions. And they've certainly gone after people for parking tickets and all sorts of other stuff. So I don't think it's true the city doesn't have the resources to go after those clients, people that haven't paid.
Her other point, Rudy Chow was the deputy director of WSSC over in the D.C. area before he came here. So he brought a lot of the best practices with him when he came. So, you know, I'm not sure that it's a matter of us not having the right people in place. He's just trying to do everything at once, and it's costing us a bundle.
Jessica, you want to say something before we hit the phone?
I wanted to jump back to the caller before Donna, which was talking about the responsibility of landlords to deal with the water bill issue. And I think, you know, for us, this is a longer term issue than just these shutoffs. This is a larger trend of commodifying our basic needs, where, you know, our system allows people to make a profit off of things that we need to survive, like housing, water, which is certainly a part of having safe, comfortable housing. And I think that trend is really just sapping people dry. It's putting our basic needs out of reach. And that's a moral question. That's a human rights issue. As Kim has said many times, as our organization is a human rights organization, we understand that. And I think that needs to be addressed. The responsibility of providing safe, adequate, affordable housing includes water, and the responsibility of making sure that people you're housing are having access to safe water. I also wanted to just bring it back a minute because someone just reminded me the comment that that Christopher made earlier about we don't want people going down to the Chesapeake and pulling out water is also a symptom of that larger commodification of basic needs, which is that, yeah, we don't want people drinking water out of our bay that has been polluted by corporations that are sometimes the same corporations that are then paid to purify our water, which is then sold to us as a service or product back through the water system. So this is a larger, you know, issue of why we're paying, who's responsible for the why we have to purify our water.
So I want to go around the room here before we have to close this conversation out. And let me read this and get a quick call in here. But let me read. Jackie wrote in, it kind of tails on what you were saying. She writes in, let me make sure I get this straight. Corporations pollute the water so that we cannot drink or harvest from our bay, rivers, or wells. The water is purified, quote unquote, by corporations who receive government tax breaks and subsidies. Then the water is sold back to us as a service or a product. Water is a human right. I think she was channeling you.
Was channeling her.
or you were channeling her. Or something like that was going on.
But again, Mark.
Chris, go ahead. Chris Summers.
Again, Mark, I couldn't disagree more that water is not a human right, regardless of what the UN is trying to promote. And there again, it goes back to, and it's not, you know, they're trying to do this as a profit motive, but every business, and it has to be treated as a business, because this is, again, delivering a resource to consumers, whether it be, you know, individual residences or nonprofits or corporations. I mean, if they're receiving this resource and they have a responsibility to pay for that resource because it's not free, whether it's government or private enterprise that's being the delivery mechanism, and, you know, obviously a lot of the responsibility is, boy, again, you have so many of these unpaid bills in the arrears for years and multi-million dollars that have not been paid, then, sure, I think maybe city government does bear some of the blame on that, and that goes back to their inefficient systems that's not allowing them to track bills or collect bills in a timely manner or erroneous meter readings because you just have antiquated systems in place. But if this continues, the cost is going to go up for everyone because it's still a service that has to be provided.
Now, let me get a call in here that I'm going to go quickly around the room and get some final thoughts from you all about where you think this needs to go next, what's going to happen. 410-319-8888, Natasha.
Hello.
Natasha, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
I was calling because my brother-in-law, he just moved out of his house, contacted the city, had the water cut off, but was told that he was still going to be charged $97 a quarter because that was minimum billing. And I was just flabbergasted because I said he will not be in the house. No one's living there. But they said this is the way the city handles things. So I'm so angry that he has to pay $97 for what?
And that is the question. And I think that the mayor will be on this program a week from this coming Monday. I'm sure this will be part of a conversation with the mayor when she's here. And we'll come back to this again next. Well, we can't come back next week. Next week is our fund drive, so we talk about other things. But we will come back to this in a very vigorous way. But let's get some closing thoughts here before we turn to our next guest. And let's start with our phone guests. Go to Kim, and then Chris, and back here to Stephen and Jessica very quickly.
Mark, one good thing in Annapolis is a piece of legislation which will raise the threshold at which cutoff could occur from $350. I believe it's going to be doubled up to $700. And that, I believe, has a good chance of passage this session. The other thing is our mayor is the vice chair of the U.S. Conference of Mayors Water Quality Council. They put out a report a couple of years ago that warned municipalities that all of the infrastructure upgrades and the cost of implementing the EPA consent decrees were going to be cost prohibitive and would adversely impact the poor. I strongly disagree with what your guest has said, Chris. This is a human rights issue. And the mayors across this country know it. They have data sustaining that this has to be something that is addressed as an affordability issue because it's going to devastate poor, low-income.
Wait. Is it one at a time because we have to finish. We have to go to our next segment very quickly. But you can have your thought here, Chris, and then we're going to get two quick thoughts from our other guests because we do have to run. Go ahead, Chris.
No, we really have to stop this nonsense that water service is a right. It falls from the sky. I mean, it's, you know, if that was really what it was, then there'd be no issue. People would just collect the water from as it's falling from the sky, and there would be no need for, you know, the Baltimore City water system services. But water is a resource, as I said. It's capital intensive. It takes a lot of work to clean, to purify, for pumping, to then to distribute to the residences. So unless if you want to argue that the resource should be tapped and city provided for free and utility and those workers who are working in the system work for free with no pay, then it really makes no sense to say that water service is a right for individuals or businesses because it is not.
And Jessica? Very quick.
Stephen,
then Jessica. I'm sorry.
Well,
very quick.
I just have to say just really quickly, as someone who's observed City Hall for a long time, there seems to be a striking lack of empathy for the way things function down there. And the fact that people have had to deal with incredibly inefficient billing system, which has made huge mistakes, and now these double-digit increases, I just think City Hall has to sort of change the political culture because it seems to me, you know, we were at the community meeting on Tuesday and the mayor wasn't there, and we tried to ask her spokesperson why the mayor wasn't there, and they started yelling at us. And I think there's a lot of defensiveness about this because I think there is some sort of inherent understanding or implicit understanding that the way it's being handled is somewhat unfair.
Jessica Lewis, wrapping it up for us.
Yeah, and I think I just want to stress again that water is a human right. We have the right on the basis of our necessity to have it to survive, that it is a human right regardless of the capital that it takes to clean it. As a housing rights organization, we think this is an essential part of having safe, adequate housing, is having access to housing to water in your home. Anybody who's received a shutoff notice or whose water has been shut off or who is even worried about the rising costs of the housing, of the water bills, we encourage you to call us at 443-863-9607. You can find us on Facebook at Right to Housing Alliance. We are taking action around this in the long term. Please contact us.
So we'll come back to this subject. It's very critical to our future. We will talk to the mayor about this a week from Monday. I want to thank all the people in the studio here, Jessica Lewis, housing organizer for the Right to Housing Alliance. You just heard before that, you heard Stephen Janis, the investigative reporter and journalist for the Real News Network.
Thank you, Mark.
Chris Summers, president of the Maryland Public Policy Institute, and Kim Trueheart, community activist here in the city of Baltimore. Thank you all so much. We'll be taking a quick break and come back to this.
Great. Thank you.